It's time for another episode of Just a Bit Outside with your hosts, Stark and Massaro.
Way back, Blue Jays win it! Touch the ball, Joe! Brett Favre! Touchdown, Green Bay! Bless you, boys! What a game!
We are live. Jabbo is back and up and running for 2022. I could not be more excited, and I'm sure my co-host Mike Massaro is feeling the same. The sports world is on fire, so we are happy to be back and just chatting about all the amazing sports that have been going on the past week, maybe even touch on the past month. But there's lots of great sports that we'll talk on today, including the Bengals win the AFC with Joe Cool behind center. The Rams come back to make it to a home Super Bowl. Luke List steals one from Zalatoris at the Farmers. Rafa becomes the GOAT on the court in Australia. And does the football GOAT retire? We will touch on all of that. But first, Mike, how was your week, your month, and even your year?
We pulled the old wrestling angle there. We're done. Kidding. We're not. We're never done.
Out of the back curtains, here we come.
Flying, just music flying hits in. And we're back on, baby. And the burning question about all of this, yes, Stark did change our script from can't lose or can't loose back to can't lose. So that was the big burning question people had, I think.
I had to make some changes, you know, some New Year's resolutions, and mine's going to be spelling.
I got a long list, but let's get into things. So great weekend, a great television sports watching weekend for me. Friday started the Scotties Tournament of Hearts, which is the Women's National Curling Championship. So, you know, that kind of consumed my weekend. Always had it on, still have it on now, and will throughout the week. And I'm sure we'll dive into that more next week. Saturday, we had the Royal Rumble, return of Ronda Rousey to the WWE. Big night.
No way.
Yeah. Surprise.
And correct me if I'm wrong, this was the first year they did two Royal Rumbles. They had a women's one and a men's one?
No, they've had the women's for a few years now.
Okay. Because when I was a kid, the women used to come right in and battle with the men.
So yeah. So they rightfully have two separate ones, and you know, it was good show.
So no spoilers, but who won?
Well, the men's was Brock Lesnar and the women's was Ronda Rousey. So two UFC
2002 or 2022? What's going on here?
Gotta give the people what they want, man. And then Sunday, I mean, you know, we obviously had the football, but in addition to the football, Canada men's soccer continues this great run for themselves. For Canada soccer as a program, you know, obviously the women's gold medal still in our thoughts from the Olympics in the summer, but the men, two big wins last week, 2-0 victories over Honduras and the U.S. keeps them in first place in the standings. Have another game Wednesday night against El Salvador to finish off this round. And then they'll have three games left in March. It's not done, but they are in very good shape to be in the World Cup later this year.
Nice to see Canada top of the table. Love it. I've been saying that all week, top of the table. I was pretty critical about Soccer Canada and what were they doing having a late January massive game outdoors at Tim Hortons Field in Hamilton. But you know what? The sun was shining. The guys looked a little cold, but they powered through it. And maybe it actually gave them a little bit of advantage against the Americans. And they came out hot and they were playing good. They obviously were all jacked up from their win against Honduras. So it was massive. Considering all the sports that were going on elsewhere, it still took up a lot of attention here in Canada, and rightfully so. It's first time I've ever seen this, and I'm so pumped that they're going to eventually play in the World Cup, knock on wood, that it keeps going well.
I almost had my Ian Starkman moment. I considered bringing a second television to the basement and a receiver box. My laziness got the better of me, and I said, the clicker's right beside me. I'll just keep pushing last channel. So I was close, man. I'm teetering.
Well, that tees me up perfectly for my kind of story of the weekend and how things went for me. But, you know, since we last kind of talked and recorded, you know, a ton has gone on. You know, Ontario, we were in lockdown here. My whole family got knocked with COVID, but we were all okay. But it just meant we were locked together for an entire month. It was essentially Groundhog Day for a month. And with nothing really to wake up for, you end up staying up later. You end up having that extra drink. It was just a bad cycle. But, you know, we got through it. And, you know, we finally decided this weekend we're free, sort of. We're going to go visit my in-laws in beautiful Leamington. Mm. One of the best hidden gems in the province of Ontario. Nice little small town. It's got that small town vibe. So we went out there, took the kids to go see everyone and all my wife's family. But Saturday night, my brother-in-law and 40 of his close personal friends got together for some outdoor hockey, and I decided to lace them up and join the fellows out there. So they rented Ziggy's in Tilbury. Great little spot. It's a drive-in movie theater. This guy built a rink in the field. Then on the actual movie screen, he put the Leafs and Red Wings game on. Now, mind you, we're in Leamington, just a short little drive from Detroit, so tons of Red Wing fans, a good amount of Leaf fans out there as well. It was awesome. It was like Canadiana. And you know me, Mike, what I always say, sometimes I wish I was just down in Arizona golfing 12 months a year, but this was pretty cool to be out there skating. And as you do in a small town, we all got together about 3 o'clock to have a few pops before the puck drop at 7 o'clock. Everyone was jacked up. We did a full draft, 5-team draft, make sure everyone was on a team. You know, I was a second round, 7th overall pick. Not a big deal.
Good spot.
You know, lots of rumors about this kid from the city coming in to play with the small town guys. So they took me pretty high. But we get to the rink, it is minus 15, but it felt like minus 25 with the wind coming from the 401 as the trucks were flying by. All this excitement for the guys for 4 hours, all the planning just falls to the wayside, of course. Half the guys, if not more, rather just stand by the fire and drink a couple beers while watching the game on the big screen. But we had a good amount of, you know, guys skating around on the ice. But you know damn well, all 40 of those guys, they woke up the next morning to their wife and kids and said, hey, I played an hour and a half of hockey. I scored 5 goals late in the third. I blocked a couple shots for my team to win. Just telling stories. But it was so much fun. It was great to be out there, get to play, you know, hang out with my brother-in-law and some of his buddies, all great guys. So it was a ton of fun. But when we were driving to Leamington, I said to my wife, I said, listen, no matter what happens, Sunday morning, we need to leave at noon, because from my father-in-law's front door to the couch in my basement is exactly 3 hours, and I'm not missing kickoff between the Chiefs and Bengals at 3 o'clock. And you know, Mike, I'm a good son-in-law. You know, everyone would say, yeah, you know, he's a great son-in-law, nice guy. I love going out there to visit my wife's family. But I had this deal with her that 12 o'clock on Sunday, boom, ninja dust. We had to get out of there. Well, after the pond hockey and about 10 plus beers, I didn't get out of bed until about 10 a.m. And I come downstairs and my mother-in-law, my wife, they say, hey, look out the window. Look at the front porch. I look out there and there's this stray cat. And I'm telling you, Mike, as I looked at this cat, I knew damn well that this cat somehow was going to cost me the first quarter of that football game. I just had this feeling. I just knew that something was going to go wrong.
What color was the cat? What kind of breed?
It was like a what kind of breed? What do I look like?
I don't know.
It was orange.
Oh, they're the friendly ones, aren't they?
I have no idea.
Me either. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about.
I'm not going out there to pet that thing or anything like that. So it was like it was just after 12 o'clock, and we're waiting for Larry to come over to get the cat, because Larry's going to find this cat a nice, warm place to live. And you know, as soon as Larry shows up, of course, the cat disappears. So everyone's outside chasing this cat around, trying to find, here, kitty, kitty, kitty. Meanwhile, I'm just sitting in the car, looking at the watch, counting the minutes. How late am I going to be? Am I going to miss the full first quarter? Am I going to miss the full first half? What is going on here? Where is this cat? Why can't we just find this cat, get it in that car, get it the hell out of here so I can get in my car and get home to watch the Chiefs and Bengals? I started to lose my mind a bit. But finally, we get the cat, get him out of there. All's done. We say our goodbyes. I record the game. I think that's the best thing to do for me. I'm like, whatever, I'll get back. When I get back, I'll start from the start and I'll go through it as I do. But this is the odd part, Mike, and it brings it back to what you were saying about maybe do I do two TVs or how do I live? I know after these last four amazing weeks of the NFL, really, these games have been so good in the playoffs. We had four great games last week, all coming down to the last play. We're not even going to really talk about them. And then we got these two conference championships games. They're the biggest thing in sports, probably in pop culture. I mean, it was talked about all over the place about that Chiefs and Bills game and these games coming up this week. And I assume that everyone is thinking the same thing as me. Got to watch this game at 3 o'clock, right? That's what everyone's thinking.
Of course.
So I stop for gas. It's around 3:30, and the guy next to me, he's filling his tank, minding his own business. But in my head, I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, what is he doing here? Why isn't he at home watching the game? Did he have a cat issue as well? You know, that's all I can think. Then I see four guys just off the highway. They're driving their snowmobiles. And I think to myself, this morning, they probably all got together on their group chat and like, hey, great day for a snowmobile ride. Let's all go out. But I'm sure one guy chimed up and said, yeah, it is a great day. But let's remember, we got to be back by 3 o'clock for kickoff. We can't miss the start of the game. But it's 3:30. These guys are still booting around in their snowmobiles. I'm like, what is going on? Then I stop off at Tim Hortons and I say, you know what? I better put my headphones in, listen to some music as I go into Tim Hortons, just in case people are talking about the game in Tim Hortons. I don't want them to ruin it for me and say, you know, hey, how about Patrick Mahomes in that first quarter, man? He went off. You know, I didn't want to have that. So I didn't want any spoilers, but nothing. No one even mentioned it. Nothing went on. You know, I get back to the car and I couldn't figure out why these people were just out in the real world living their normal life when a massive football game was on. Why weren't they watching? So it made me start to think, there's only two reasons why this is happening. One, all these people are in the same boat as me. They're recording the game. Their phones are off. They're just trying to get through the day without any spoilers. Or two, I'm a psycho. I'm a sports psycho, which is what my wife was calling me. I mean, how are not these people wanting to watch this game? Am I the only one thinking, why aren't you at home watching this game at 3 o'clock?
Well, I have to think, for a guy who is so hell-bent on being home for kickoff, that was a lot of stops to make along the way.
I got kids, Mike. We're doing a lot of stops on a three-hour drive.
Do you really tape the conference championships? I suppose you do in your case, but I just couldn't do that.
It worked out perfect, Mike, though. Regardless, I got home. I was on the couch by about 4:30. Everything worked out. I was all caught up, watched the whole Chiefs game before the 6:30 kickoff. I didn't have to watch that brutal halftime. Everything was gravy. It all worked out for me in the end.
Well, I noticed now why you were pretty silent on our on our exchanges with Mr. Skamura, because I was like, this is just John and I talking here. He must be taping something, because I was going to say something about the golf too, and I didn't. And I'm sure we'll get into that, but maybe that orange cat, maybe it was a symbol that the Bengals were going to win.
Wow.
There it is.
Did not even think about that.
There
I'm
it
posting
is.
A picture of that cat. It does look just like a Bengal. They should call it, you know what that cat should be
Joe.
Called? Joe Cool. Because that's Joe Burrow. I love it. But hey, stick around for our T5. It's coming up right after this break. Let's start with the AFC Championship game between the Kansas City Chiefs and the Cincinnati Bengals for RT1. Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs were 7-point favorites and looked to be easily covering that number on their way to their third straight Super Bowl appearance. But a mistake to end the first half, followed by a Joe Burrow comeback and the Bengals defense holding the Chiefs to just 3 points in the second half, set up an epic OT, which saw Mr. Clutch Evan McPherson kick a 31-yard field goal to win the game and send Cincinnati to the Super Bowl. Mike, this is exactly how you saw this game going, right?
Oh, exactly. And I think if I remember back correctly to our football preview show, the AFC preview, I think Zach Taylor was a coach who I had on the hot seat.
Of course.
So it shows you what I know. But, you know, Cincinnati goes back to their first Super Bowl since 1989. the way this game started, and I think all of us who are not Chiefs fans, and this is no shot at Chiefs fans or anything like that, I think we all collectively wanted to see somebody other than the Chiefs. And we probably felt a little let down that the Bills didn't get it done, especially how that game went. So we're all kind of pulling for the Bengals, knowing it probably was going to take a hell of an effort. And when Kansas City comes out, scores three touchdowns on their first three possessions, it's 21-3. It was like, I think this is done. But Kansas or Cincinnati gets that touchdown, the passing play to Perrine there. He gets in, makes it 21-10. Chiefs go all the way downfield and, you know, a big ballsy, risky move. Fourth and goal. They go for it. If they get that, that's probably game 28-10 going into half. But the Cincinnati Bengals stop them well short. I think Tyreek Hill makes a reception, gets tackled down, end of the half, 21-10. And that just swung the momentum in Kansas City's favor to start the second half.
I agree. It was a dumb play that was made out of maybe being a little bit cocky.
Yep.
And assuming it would work out. You know, we'll figure out a way. We'll get the points here, whether it's a touchdown or a field goal. I mean, there's less than 10 seconds to go in the entire half. Your play is either into the end zone for a touchdown or they drop it and then, okay, bring the kicking team out and kick it. But he threw it off almost, you know, almost losing yards really on the play. Mahomes was not the same after that. And you're right, that 18-point deficit erased, it was really on the back of great D by Cincinnati as they chased Mahomes around. They made him kind of force him to be a little bit uncomfortable with a lot of his throws in the second half, which we don't usually see with Mahomes. He usually can get out of trouble and still be able to find the receiver and make the plays downfield, whether it's a check down or a long play. Meanwhile, Burrow, he seemed to scramble away from all the trouble. No problem at all. Twice on third down, he was able to move away, but use his legs to create some space and either pass it down or run it himself to get a little bit more yardage. And I thought that was the big difference. The Chiefs were just rolling early, as you said. Those first three possessions were as good as I've seen them play in a while, since they struggled in mid part of the regular season and then started to pick it up in the back half. They were playing great. And like you, Mike, 21-3 and then even 21-10. I did not even for a second think that the 7-point difference for you gamblers out there was even going to come into play. I thought it was going to easily be a 14 or 21-point difference at the end of the night.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, we've touched on it. The adjustments the defense made for the second half, they were bringing a good amount of pressure at the right times. Their coverage was really good throughout. And to hold Kansas City to 3 points in Kansas City in the second half and force two turnovers in the course of the last two quarters plus overtime. I mean, hats off to them from that side of the ball. The offense just kept chipping away, get their field goal, get their touchdown to get 11 points in the third quarter. And then they get the field goal to take the lead and then put the ball back in Kansas City's hands to tie it eventually. But it just felt like a big shift in that momentum swing in the second half. Kansas City couldn't do anything. Cincinnati was making the plays needed to put themselves in position to win.
And if you remember, Mike, kind of leading up to this game, a lot of the talk was about the O-line, but the Cincinnati O-line and how they allowed 9 sacks the week before. Burrow just kept getting sacked, but they were still able to win the game. But then this week, it was the Chiefs who allowed Mahomes to be sacked 4 times. They just seemed out of sync. That pressure from Cincinnati, their front four, it didn't seem to be that big of a deal for them. And Mahomes was usually quick. They were getting them, and they were losing the yardage at key points, and that was the big thing. It wasn't just the first downs; it was the third downs where they were really pressuring them, forcing punts, forcing turnovers. It was a problem for them. Now the Chiefs. I mean, Mike, I still believe that they're a great team. With Mahomes, they'll always be contenders. But you have to believe that they just threw away 2 really good chances at Super Bowls in the Mahomes prime. Last year against Tampa Bay, and then this year, everyone thought after that Bills win, it was meant to be. They were going to march right to the finals, and they threw it away in this game. This was their chance. Win this one, make it, and then pound away whoever it was going to be in the Super Bowl. So I think it was a big misstep for the Chiefs. But on the other hand, Cincinnati, Wow, what a story. Burrow, he's just so cool. He's calm. He's a really cocky man. He knew he wanted Ja'Marr Chase in that draft. He told them, and he knew he could win with this team. And they put together the perfect team for him and for the way he plays. And that's a big difference compared to some of these other quarterbacks out there. You can even throw Rodgers in there and any of these younger players who are struggling right now, finding what is the right fit for their team. It looks like Cincinnati is able to put it together. Now, his numbers weren't amazing. 23 for 38, 250 yards. But he found ways not to be sacked, keeping the chains moving. Plus, he lost his tight end early on, and he was forced to use Higgins a lot. They just were able to figure out a game plan to win that game. And that's what was so impressive about the Bengals on Sunday.
Yeah, they have a good trio of receivers, Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd, and then obviously Joe Mixon, one of the top running backs in football. So all that being led by Joe Burrow, they have a great offense. They've proven that. They've beaten Kansas City twice, the top-seeded Titans now in the span of a month. I mean, they deserve to be in the Super Bowl. No disrespect to the Chiefs, as you said. It's just, you know, Cincinnati's the hot hand right now.
And you know what? I'm happy for Cincinnati fans. And I do believe they actually have a shot at winning it all. So
for sure,
it'll be interesting. We'll get into the Super Bowl next week. But after that game and the four games last week, I was positive we were due for a blowout. And it's probably going to come here in the NFC Championship, which I was wrong. And that will be RT2. The LA Rams hosted the San Francisco 49ers in their third meeting this year, but this one for the NFC title. After a scoreless first quarter, it was the 49ers that got out to the 17-7 lead heading into the fourth. But Matt Stafford and Cooper Kupp scored quick and then were able to set up the game-tying field goal before the Pro Bowl defense finally woke up to shut down Jimmy G, giving the Rams one final kick to end it and send them to the home field Super Bowl. Mike, was there any chance the 49ers were going to hold on to that lead after what we have seen the past 2 weeks?
I mean, the way the game was going, when they got up 17-7 and, you know, going downfield, they kind of stalled things offensively. Neither team could really get the run game going. And that's probably San Francisco's forte on offense, is their ability to run the ball.
For sure.
But they couldn't really get that going. They had the lead. McVay challenges two plays, loses both, blows all three timeouts. And shortly after that, Tart almost picked off Stafford, which probably would have put things in San Francisco's hands. But because of that, LA goes down. I think that after that play, they kicked the game tying field goal to make it 17-17. So there's numerous opportunities for San Francisco to put this one to bed, and they just couldn't do it. And I think we all kind of said, if this gets to a point in the game where the 49ers are going to rely on Jimmy Garoppolo, they're screwed. And sure enough, that's what happens. Rams are up 20-17. Ball goes in Jimmy's hands. They bring the pressure, and he throws a pick. And the LA Rams are going to the Super Bowl.
And it's so funny you said that, and how it came down to Jimmy G and could he make it happen? Because let's be honest, there was a ton of talk about multiple different quarterbacks going in to be the quarterback for the 49ers this year. They never pulled the trigger on that, and they rolled with Jimmy G, had that tough start, but they were able to eventually make it to the NFC Championship game. Whereas on the other end of the spectrum here, the Rams, 1 year to the day, Sean McVay traded for Matt Stafford, got him out of Detroit, and he takes the Rams to a Super Bowl. I'm happy for him. I'm sure Lions fans are happy for him as they understand it was their team holding him back and not the other way around. But most impressive was his TD in the second quarter on a 3-13 from the 22-yard line. He took his time. He knew the pressure was coming before he delivered the perfect placement into Kupp's hands. You know, Stafford has a chance to step into the conversation as an elite quarterback in this league and with this team for years to come. I think they got a great group, and I really like the way the Rams are playing. Yes, they had a little bit of adversity here, They were down. They were down by 10 at home with more 49ers fans and Rams fans in their building. You mentioned it. Tart, he should have caught that long bomb for Stafford. And I'm sure in Stafford's head, he was saying, oh no, what did I do? I just don't have the arm strength to get it past him to my receivers. It was right in his hands. It should have been an INT. That totally would have changed the game. And it definitely would have changed the way that fourth quarter was being played out. And the Rams didn't have timeouts. They would have been in big, big trouble. But he dropped it. A new life. They got the chance now. And Stafford took advantage of it, marched the team down for the tying field goal and then the game-winning field goal. I'm very happy for Stafford. And I think now the Rams are a real legit team. They're there, and they're going to prove that they got a Super Bowl team in L.A.
Yeah, again, I mean, to me, this game just kind of feels like San Francisco lost more than the Rams won. I mean, up by 10 after three, they had some chances. You know, they punted a couple times within the Rams territory. So, you know, it goes to show you what they thought of the offense there. But you know what? I mean, credit to the Rams. They went all in this year to put themselves in this position, trading for Stafford, trading away numerous number one picks, trading away numerous picks to pick up Von Miller. Robert Woods goes down with an ACL. They bring in OBJ, and he's fit in really nicely here. I mean, the earliest pick they have in next year or this year's draft is the fifth round before the compensatory picks get all sorted. But look, tale of two stories, them and the Packers, both teams kind of go all in. And the Rams are there. So it should be a good Super Bowl.
Look at the weapons that the Rams have on offense. It's hilarious to really look at. Cooper Kupp, and you mentioned Beckham Jr., they combined for 20 catches for 255 yards, two touchdowns, both by Kupp. The offense is fast, but they're smart with it. There's no back-breaking turnovers. I think they've only had one INT in the postseason for Stafford. They're playing smart. They're playing great. And I really like the way that they're gelling offensively. I thought, yes, they were going to get more than 20 points in this game. I thought there was a chance that they were going to be the ones to blow out the 49ers and really put up an offensive number. It didn't happen. But now they got the chance to do it all over again. They got 2 weeks. McVay's got 2 weeks to figure out this Cincinnati defense. I think the Rams are just going to gel perfectly offensively in a two-week period where it could be a big number that they're going to put on those Bengals. Now, the one thing I wanted to call out that I thought was a little bit odd, and I'm not sure if you saw this, Mike, but the 49ers kicker, Robbie Gould, he thinks he's such a tough guy or something. I don't know what the hell's going on with him. He's pushing and shoving with Ramsey at the end of the first half. And then they showed that he was kicking balls over the cheerleaders a few weeks back. And then he was kicking balls over the band while they were on the field. And then this week he was actually kicking balls over the Rams while they were lining up to start for the kickoff of the second half. I mean, they should have gone, took that ball off his little kickstand, thrown it up into the stands and said, get out of here, Robbie. Get off our field. We'll let you know when the kickers are needed. Just bully the guy. It was unbelievable, the balls on this guy to get out there. I'm not sure if you saw that.
I saw some of the exchange with Jalen Ramsey. I didn't know too much of the backstory, but yeah, anytime kickers get involved, it's usually a good laugh.
Yeah. Well, football is king. And all the leagues know that. So that is why the PGA finally did something smart and moved one of their bigger events to end it in prime time on Saturday night away from the NFL Championship weekend. And that will be our T3. Will Zalatoris, he is coming off his Rookie of the Year performance in 2021 and has started this season hot. And he was looking to secure his first win of the year at the Farmers Insurance Open at Torrey Pines with his approach shot on 18 that sat 8 feet away from a birdie. But after he just missed, he eventually lost in the first playoff hole to Luke List, who had been waiting over a decade for his first PGA Tour win. Mike, everyone wants to know, would you have made that 8-footer for the win?
Probably not. And I remember as soon as he hit the putt, I'm like, he should have hit it harder. What the hell? It would have stayed straighter. I say that I probably would have smashed it into a bunker. But you know, you feel for Zalatoris, who's just, he's going to get one eventually. But,
of course,
you know, for Luke List, his 206th tournament, he finished up 2 hours ahead of the final groups. And I caught his interview and they had asked, like, do you think you've put yourself in a position to, you know, win or be part of something? At that point, he was minus 15, 66 for the final round. And he just said, you know, I don't know. It's kind of out of my hands. He was a clubhouse leader at that point. He was just happy that he had a good final round and, you know, put himself up there. Sure enough, 2 hours later, with the birdie missed by Zalatoris on 18, they're going to a playoff. So, you know, good of him not to cool down over the course of 2 hours, but, you know, has a hell of a wedge shot to put himself with a tap in for the win on the playoff, gets himself 500 FedEx points and puts himself fourth in the standings for his first career win.
I just want everyone listening, and yourself included, Mike, think about what state your body is in 2 hours after you finish a round. And I'm talking about walking a round that's over 7,000 yards. I can barely move. I can speak to that. And I'm probably about four beers deep 2 hours after my round.
I ride and I'm tired. So there you go, man. There's the other perspective.
This guy shoots a 66 and, as you mentioned, waits 2 hours between the time he putts in on the 72nd hole and when he tees up on the first playoff hole. But it didn't change his hot play. He piped that right down the middle. Great little wedge shot in and a nice tap-in birdie. I think Zalatoris, you know, I feel bad for him. He played 18 as perfectly as possible. He put that ball, you know, laid up, put it perfect. He was below the cup, uphill putt. He should have known that, and he didn't hit it hard enough. Watching him walk up the fairway to get to that green, he looked like a confident guy, and I was saying to myself, you know, this is going to be one of those guys to watch out for, to get hot in the next 2-3 years, you know, similar to the way we saw a Thomas a few years back and Spieth even before him, where it's that next wave of young guys. And I'm like, this is starting early. I mean, this is a big tournament to win. It'd be huge for Zalatoris. Get him into all the majors, get him into the players, get him a lot of FedEx points to lead into that playoff run at the end of the year. Give him a good chance of making the President's Cup team at the end of the year. All this stuff I was thinking as he's walking up 18, and you know he's thinking the same thing, but he's got to make that putt. And he just left it short enough where at the very end, it just rolled just a tinge to the left, and it cost him. And I knew as soon as he missed that putt, he's not winning. His mind was just mangled. He's got to rush in, sign the scorecard. The sun was going down. They hustled him out there. List was focused. He knew what had to happen. So it was great. I mean, it's good experience. Like you said, Zalatoris is going to be back there. He's going to be in more situations like that this year. And I think he definitely will get some wins. But hey, great story about List. Getting that win, 205 starts is amazing. And now he's in the Masters. He's in the majors. He's going to be in the Century Tournament Champions. And he's got a head start on that FedEx Cup playoff. So it was great to see.
Yeah, for sure. And to keep with the good stories rolling, I think a guy everybody likes on tour, Jason Day, finishes 14 under. You know, he's been winless since 2018. Hold out for an eagle on 14, which was awesome. What an absolute beautiful shot. But, you know, he's been going through some stuff. He's had some back issues and
he had some bad vertigo for a while.
That's right. That plagued Dave Duvall and knocked him kind of from number one in the world down. And Jason Day is very similar with these injuries these guys go through. And he said, you know, this past week, the Farmers Open here, Farmers Insurance Open, was the first tournament that he hasn't felt pain in a long time, and he's been making a lot of swing changes, feels like he's progressing well. So, you know, good to see him. Obviously falls off with bogeys on 16 and 17 there, but a good guy to see on the leaderboard again.
Yeah, he's one of those guys, you know, you always see his name in the field, but he hasn't been around the top in a while. So to see him, and I was watching, he literally put that ball on 14, call it 8 feet past the hole, and boom, a quick suck back right off the pin in the cup. What a way to eagle it. I mean, even Zalatoris, who they're battling coming down the stretch, they're high-fiving in the middle of the fairway. But yeah, the bogey on 16, par 3, and you know what? He just chunked it. Like, he was a good 40 yards short of the green. I don't know what happened there. And that's kind of plagued him. Is a couple bad shots here or there has cost him in the past. And hopefully he cleans it up and he gets back to his winning ways, because you know he wants to be on that President's Cup team for the internationals and get a chance at the Americans and be a leader on that team. So he'll be a guy to watch all year long. So keep an eye on Jason Day. Guy I want to touch on, Mike, is John Rahm. I mean, I thought he would have taken this one and just, you know, going in that final round. I think he was a shot back, maybe two shots back, and he's the number one player in the world, and he's got a chance to win every week. I thought he was just going to run it, take it away, and really win this tournament. But you know what? He's just becoming really unlikable, and he's got this attitude on the course and his comments, whether they're on the course or off, and he's talking about, you know, yeah, I didn't really play good today, I didn't hit the ball well. You hit every fairway, so shut it, that's not the problem. You know, then he's bitching about it being a putting contest at the previous tournament. He's just getting this attitude that's really annoying, and you know, he's not Tiger Woods. And Tiger Woods never really said this. He knew the field was, you know, the course was the same for everyone, and he just went out there and dominated and won by a ton. And when he played to win. And Rahm's becoming a little bit of a villain on the tour right now, and it's not something you want to see for the number one player in the world.
Yeah, I think Thursday too, what was it, second hole, he started like smashing his driver after his tee shot, and even Nick Faldo made a comment on the broadcast like, you got to keep your head. And look, this is something that has plagued him over the past couple of years on his rise to prominence here on the PGA Tour. The temper and those things have been something that he has had to deal with. And some tournaments, you know, when he goes and wins the US Open, he's pretty good at holding it together. But there's other instances where, you know, as you alluded to, plays well, but still finds issues and complains about them. And, you know, these are things that turn people on you. But I mean, on the flip side, having some villains on tour is never a bad thing. It's good for TV, keeps things interesting. I'm sure Bryson loves it, gets his name out of there for a little bit. But yes, you know, for him to continue on this path, he's got to rein that in a little bit. And I think he'll start winning a lot more. But look, I mean, he's the top player, one of the top guys on tour. And it's just something he's going to have to continue to rein in at times.
Now, everyone was trying to avoid the NFL this weekend, and the Aussie Open was no different, as they had a record-breaking moment on Sunday morning in the men's final, and that will be our T4. The 35-year-old Spaniard Rafa Nadal was forced to win his record-setting 21st major title in dramatic fashion, come from behind after going down the first two sets to Daniel Medvedev. But Nadal battled back and won 6-4, 6-4, 7-5 in a 5-hour, 24-minute match to pass both Roger Federer and Novak Djokovic to hold the record all by himself. Mike, does this win make him the greatest of all time?
I mean, in any sport, you know, it's the amount of championships you win, and, you know, people will point to stats as being as important. I think at the end of the day, it's the number of championships you bring. And what is he, 21-8 now in Grand Slam finals, something like that? And until, you know, it was Federer, once he hit, what was it, 18 was the number. And now Djokovic and Nadal were on 20. Now Nadal hits 21. So these guys keep pushing it further and further. So the person with the most championships to me is the greatest.
Yeah, we're in the weird situation of got to be the greatest era of men's tennis of all time. And I don't follow tennis too closely, but you got three players still currently playing that are leading in the major title race. Like, imagine if Tiger and Jack were playing at the same time. It'd be unbelievable to watch. Now, I can't claim that Nadal is the greatest ever just yet. The other two still have time to play, and this was a surprise win for Nadal. You know, he's only won one other time at the Aussie Open. He usually only gets his major wins at the French Open nowadays on the clay surface. He doesn't even play a lot at the U.S. Open anymore. He went over to play because he didn't play too much in 2021. And this was kind of his warm-up to get playing before the French, get that competition. Well, then you got, you know, the Joker kind of being deported, and he's out of the tournament. Federer is recovering from knee surgery. He might never play again. So this was his kind of time to shine and really be the face of the tournament. And he was. Everyone was behind him. Everyone was pulling for him. And he was able to get that win and get that 21. Now he's holding it now. I don't know how long it's going to be. I mean, Djokovic could win the next three and pass him, no problem. But it was nice because, you know what? Just like we were just talking about Rahm, oddly enough, another Spaniard, Nadal is very likable. He's not as public as the other two stars in the sport. You know, the fans were rooting for him. He's now the fourth man to win all four titles at least twice. And think about that. He had 20 major wins, but only one of them was the Aussie Open. So I don't know why he's really balanced. He was really focused on which events that he was going to be good at. But he's a guy that's battled injuries, and you could tell he looks worn down. And I'm just concerned that this might be the last one for him.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see, right? These guys seem to trade shots and go back and forth. I'm sure the number of titles will flip-flop until they're both said and done. But, you know, damn impressive, 21. Djokovic, you know, he said he'll probably be back here at some point when that stuff gets sorted out and we'll be contending again. And I'm sure he'll win his 21st at some point and the conversation will start again. But the only other thing I want to mention on the women's side, Ashley Barty, the first Aussie woman to win on home soil since 1978, being Danielle Collins, American. So good for the Aussie folks to have one of their own win it at home.
And speaking of our own, the Canadians did pretty good on the men's side. The two of them making it to the quarterfinals. I know Chapeau, you know, he's just a really fiery and passionate kid. You know, he's a man now. He's been in the tour for a few years. He strongly believes that he's going to be one of the top players, and that's great. You want that. You want that in an athlete. Think at a young age, I'm going to be one of those top guys. I am one of the best. I can compete with all of them. And obviously he lost to Nadal, but then he was calling out Nadal, saying, you know, that Nadal took too much time in between serves, and he took a little bit longer time when he had an injury timeout, and everyone should be treated equal. No, sorry. It's not the case. Nadal's got 21 majors now. If he needs an extra 30, 40 seconds to, you know, tie his shoes, wink, wink, and walk out there, I think he's granted that time. Don't worry, Chapo. When you get your first and then maybe your 10th and maybe your 15th, we'll start giving you a little bit more time. I just think it wasn't a good look to be complaining about Nadal when he was kind of the face of the tournament this week. Now, from the tennis goat to the football goat, our T5 will be a moving target as we discuss Tom Brady's potential retirement. On Saturday, Adam Schefter broke the news that Tom Brady was retiring, and Twitter went crazy. But a few hours later, Tom's agent informed the Bucks that Tom had not retired and he was still finalizing his decision. Schefter has stated that his statement was true and the announcement was just delayed. Mike, is Brady following in the footsteps of Big Ben Roethlisberger and retiring, or do you think there's 1 year left in the 45-year-old?
I mean, it sure sounds like it. You know, leading into the game and everything, there was more conversation than there's ever been about the possibility of Tom Brady calling it a career. And, you know, some of the comments he made after the game on his, the Let Go podcast he does, he was talking about family and those things being important factors in the decision. And it just seemed like every conversation was leading towards him calling it a career. And, you know, this news breaks Saturday, and I think even his own TB12, whatever it's called, they put out a tweet about it, deleted it within an hour. So, you know, who knows, right? There's a chance if you go off his numbers, he passed over 5,300 passing yards and 43 touchdowns. So obviously he can still play. But, you know, at some point this decision is going to come, and he's talked about going out while he can still play and not kind of going out when time dictates, right? So I don't know. We'll see what happens. I think the possibility is a lot more likely this year that he is going to call it a day. And, you know, I kind of looked at it one way where I said, this news breaks, they come out and say nothing's decided yet. I think he deserves that opportunity to be the one to break that news. 22 seasons, 7 Super Bowls, you know, 5-time Super Bowl MVP, holds pretty much every major passing category statistic in the NFL history. I know that's not how things work all the time with news and breaking and leaks of information, but I think in an instance like this, he deserves the opportunity to go out when he decides to and make that announcement himself. So it doesn't always happen that way, but I think he deserves that chance if that's the direction he's going.
Remember when athletes used to retire and it would be like the night before and a word would leak, like, oh, there's a press conference. It's 12 o'clock tomorrow. It's got to be, you know, Wayne Gretzky's retiring or Mario Lemieux's retiring or whatever it may be. And then all the media would get together in some little dungy room and the player would come out there and all the clicking of the cameras and they would start crying and announce their retirement and talk about how it's been a childhood dream just to play a game and now to do it to make money. Yada yada yada. Well, those days are done. The way these guys retire now is all calculated, and they need to get a video out that's going to get a certain amount of views and a certain amount of likes and a certain amount of retweets. And that's the most important thing because there's going to be sponsorships involved and they're going to make some money on it. So for damn sure Tom Brady's retiring. He's just not retiring the way that Adam Schefter wants him to retire, which is just Schefter tweeting about it.
Right.
Brady, they're still working on the video. He's like, hey, you know, I'm going to go on vacation.
It's a lot of stats to go through.
Yeah, I'm going to go on vacation for a bit. We're going to, let's get this big, like 5-minute video and we'll release it. And then I'll pop up on maybe a live stream and I'll discuss the retirement and what made my decision. And that's how he wants to do it. He likes to control everything. You know, but Schefter got wind that the work behind the scenes, it was in progress. And before, you know, it took out there that Tom wanted to leave, Schefter was going to say, I'm going to leak this and say that he's going to retire. I mean, when it comes to it, I think it was a good run. He had a great season this year, but it was a mess down there in Tampa with all that was going on with injuries and obviously the AB situation. And it just probably, he was like, what am I doing this for? Why am I killing my body all year round for this nonsense, for this clown show? We won down here. I proved that I can win without Bill Belichick. And that's the most important thing to me. He should have really retired last year. Yes, he had a great stats a year and a disappointing loss at the end, but he looked old and I think it was time and better to go out now kind of like this and just after a win than saying I'm coming back for one more year and having a bad injury or a really disappointing year where you only get 3 or 4 wins and then it's a full blow up. This is the good time to end it. And this is a good time to retire. And I think Tom's going to announce that retirement as soon as he gets that video done. But on the other note, you got Ben Roethlisberger who quickly put together a three-minute little video and he announced his retirement. It was a little bit different. I mean, he probably wanted to keep playing, but he just struggled so bad this year. He had to retire. I don't think any team was going to take a chance on him anyway. Guy's got so many injuries, but you know what? They're both really good guys. These young quarterbacks out there now, they're fast, they're strong. They can throw it deep at any moment. They can maneuver around the pocket. And Tom and Ben, they just can't do that anymore.
Yeah, I thought maybe last year would have been Ben's last year, you know, after the elbow injury there in 2019 where he was knocked out for the season, came back last year and played the season. I thought that could have been it, but gave it a go this year. 18 season, 2-time Super Bowl champ. You know, will be in the Hall of Fame come 2027 when he's eligible. A good career, and now the Steelers will move on. You know, in that case, it was quite obvious that he probably wasn't going to be able to do another year. So 18 seasons, it's a hell of a run.
Think about that Hall of Fame get-together of Ben, Tom, and Gronk all going in together. That would be a hell of a group to go in. Now, I know that all of you out there are wondering, how did our NFL season-long head-to-head go? Well, oddly enough, we tied 32-32. So Mike We're both winners. Congratulations. But we will have some fun betting between the two of us this year, and we hope to have you fans interacting with us and following along. We got a couple fun things planned to get you gambling with Mike and I and picking some sports winners. So it'll be a fun year on that end, and we'll make sure to keep you all up to date on it. But that wraps up our T5. We have a short break, and then we will check in on the sports topics we missed during the break. Now, not doing the podcast for about a month, we still witnessed so many great sports moments, and I was forced to just tell my wife all my thoughts on the sports world during the lockdown. She doesn't have as many hot takes as you, Mike, so it wasn't worth recording and sending out to the world. But in my mind, I was kind of doing a podcast by myself, which was kind of cool. But Mike, we are back, and I thought for our game this week, we could take a look back at what we have missed in the sports world over the last month. And in honor of you and your favorite singer of all time, Kelly Clarkson, I've named this game Since You've Been Gone. Are you ready?
Yes, but that's not my favorite singer.
No, don't lie, Mike. Come on, let's be honest. Number one, your thoughts on Georgia winning the national championship?
I think deserving. You know, over the course of the season, we had talked numerous times that how they were the number one seed throughout the year and, you know, get a convincing win over Alabama, avenge the SEC loss, the SEC championship loss. Big fourth quarter for them to get the job done. Truly deserving national champions for last season.
I thought it was outstanding. I had them as the preseason favorite with a nice little sprinkle on them. I mean, hell, I went to Vegas to watch the championship game. It was awesome to see lots of Bulldog fans down there, and they played a great second half to pull off that win. I think their D-line was the deciding factor, caused a lot of problems for Bryce Young. But this could be it for Georgia. A lot of their players are going to go pro and get drafted pretty high after that win, which is nice. And Bama looks to be all over the transfer portal, if you've noticed that. But still, a great win and a fun game, and that's what the national championship is all about. Getting those two teams, however you want to do it. You want to do just picking two. You want to do a playoff of 4, 8, 12. Let's get the top two teams from whatever conference it might be and get them playing each other, and that was what it was this year. Number two, thoughts on Aaron Rodgers losing at home in the divisional playoff round.
I was hoping to avoid all of this, hence the break. That's the real reason we did it. You know, disappointing. Second year in a row as the number one seed, losing games at Lambeau Field in the playoffs. You know, there was a point up until I think 2001, 2002, where the Packers had not lost a playoff game at Lambeau Field. And since then, I believe we're 7-7. That's embarrassing. In the conditions they were in, it was favorable for Green Bay for that, you know, the type of season, the type of weather that they're used to play in. The hot weather 49ers come in and beat them. I think the game was won and lost in special teams, but having said that, the offense did not do enough to put us over the edge. The defense played fantastic. This is probably the best defense the Packers have had since the Super Bowl season of 2010-2011, and really put them in a position to win. The special teams cost the game, but the offense didn't do enough, and that falls on the quarterback. So a disappointing end to what could have been a special season.
Massively disappointing. That's what I had written down. I mean, they score on the first drive, then not again the rest of the game. That's something that a Hall of Fame quarterback, a self-proclaimed superstar, does not do. 0-4 against the 49ers, a losing record at Lambeau in the playoffs. He's great, but I'm sick of him, and he probably needs a change of scenery. I mean, he took up more airtime on all the networks and all the podcasts and everything you could possibly think of than any other person in sports this year. And then he just flops in the playoffs like that. I mean, I wanted to see them go on and keep going because the story was so good. And just like that, boom, they're gone. It's over. And I didn't even get a chance to talk to you about it the next day, which was sad. But
you say all that as a Bears fan or just a football fan?
Just a football fan.
Okay, okay. Just a football I'll accept fan, that. Let, I'll accept
let's
that.
Hope he's out of the division next year. All right, number three. Thoughts on Bonds and Clemens not being elected into the Hall of Fame in their last year of eligibility?
I mean, I think we've touched on this in the past just with baseball and the steroids. I think it's ridiculous. You know, as you've said in the past, and I agree with you, put an asterisk beside it. Say they were on, you know, steroids and everything. It wasn't illegal at that point when they were playing. The numbers speak for themselves and what they've done. They should be in there. I think it's just ridiculous, but I agree with you. Put an asterisk. Do what you need to do, but they should be in.
With all due respect to Roy Halladay, Roger Clemens is the best pitcher in Blue Jays history. 2 years with the Blue Jays, 1997 and 98, with a record of 41-13, 498 innings pitched, a 2.05 ERA at 97, 563 strikeouts, all while playing in the AL East against the Red Sox and Yankees during their big years. Meanwhile, he's got brutal offensive teams backing him up. He's definitely a Hall of Famer. The Hall of Fame is a place for the best players of all time. And they're both Hall of Famers, Bonds included, no question. But both are known to be alleged cheaters and all-around pricks. That's the problem when you have voting for a Hall of Fame. Too much off-the-field stuff clouds the voting. I say vote them in, tell their story, because in 80 years, when a 10-year-old kid goes to visit the museum with his dad and he asks, why is the home run leader not in the museum and not in the Hall of Fame? They'll have to explain it somehow, so have it in there. Here's the guy that hit the most home runs in a single season. Here's the guy that hit the most home runs in a career. But here's what happened to him throughout his career and how he was a Hall of Famer before and after taking steroids. Number four, your thoughts on Leon Draisaitl being pissy.
I mean, in fairness, the reporter asked a fair question to begin this exchange. And if you haven't watched it, check it out. It's everywhere. And Draisaitl responded, absolutely everything. Reporter asked him to elaborate on what is everything. And Draisaitl makes a comment, well, you seem to know everything. You know, you tell me. And he said, why are you so pissy? And it kind of went back and forth. So now I guess you really don't have to watch it. I kind of explained it to you. But, you know, at that point, the Edmonton Oilers were pretty much in a month-long losing streak. You know, no player in any sport is going to be in the most jovial mood during a losing streak like that. And getting into, you know, public spats with the media never is a good decision. And, you know, I also, both sides are to blame on this one. You know, I don't think the reporter really needed to keep digging in and, you know, making it a big deal. But, you know, both sides kind of hold the blame here. And, you know, it is what it is. It was a losing situation and just nothing to be gained on either side from that exchange, in my opinion.
Leon Draisaitl deserves an award for this press conference. The media member was looking for Draisaitl to say, our problem is both of our goaltenders can't stop a beach ball. But he's too good of a guy to do that. So when he said our issue is everything, Jim Matheson, who was the reporter and he's been following the Oilers for almost 40 years, should have got the hint that he wasn't going to go there where he wanted him to go. Once he calls him pissy, the PR director should have stopped the press conference, got Draisaitl off the stage. And if Leon was smart, he would have asked for a one-on-one chat with Jim after and explained to him that he wasn't answering the question the way that he wanted to because he wasn't going to throw his goaltenders under the bus during a press conference. And if he had a real problem with the goaltending, he should go ask GM Ken Holland what he thinks the problem is with the team losing 10 in a row. Mike, number five, what's your thoughts on Matsuyama's eagle in the playoff at the Sony Open?
Unbelievable. What is he? Birdies 18 to put himself into the playoff. Sun death, three wood, 276 into the sun. So he'd even see what happened. He just heard the roar of the crowd, 3 feet for an eagle. After shooting a 63 on Sunday to put himself in the playoffs. So, you know, just a hell of a shot. Matsuyama's a great player. I think he ties KJ Choi now for most tour wins by an Asian-born player, and he's probably going to win a few more. Defending Masters champion, he's a great player, and that was one hell of a shot.
It was jaw-dropping. I mean, first, what a comeback, being down five shots with nine holes left, and lucky Russell Henley puked all over himself on the back nine. But once he saw Henley hit the bunker on the first playoff hole, he knew he was the only one that could get to the par five green in two. He probably thought a tap-in birdie would have been nice, but he hits the three wood 277 yards to 2 feet for the win. I just feel bad that Henley had to slap it around to finish, getting a bogey before Hideki could finally tap in for the win. But what a shot, and what a player. Definitely a guy I'm keeping my eye on this year to have another massive year. Number six, Mike, your thoughts on that Chiefs-Bills game?
I mean, one of, if not the best football game in a long time, not just this season, but in a long time. It was just kind of shot for shot throughout the game. And what Josh Allen was doing, what Patrick Mahomes was doing, it's like you're playing a Madden video game. You know, 13 seconds, you're like, I got all the time in the world to get down and score. In reality, that is, you know, very, very small window. And there's very few players that can execute in that amount of time. But, you know, it just kind of felt at that point, whoever was going to win this game was going to go on and be the Super Bowl representative for the AFC and probably the champion. I mean, fast forward a week, that doesn't happen. But the game itself was incredible. And like I said, definitely the best game this season. And in recent memory, one of the best ones I can remember in the last few years.
Best game I've ever seen. I mean, I thought it was that Pat's Super Bowl comeback against the Falcons, but this was better than that. And like everyone, I thought it was over multiple different times. But as a sports gambler, I had the Chiefs -2.5. So at one point, there was one point in the game I was rooting for the Bills and Josh Allen to convert the two-point conversion to tie the game, which then would allow the Chiefs to take a three-point lead, which then would force the Chiefs to come down, kick a field goal to tie it, then go to overtime where it would allow Kansas City to cover with a field goal or touchdown to win. And man, it worked out perfectly for me. So I was going nuts watching that game. It was a game that will be remembered as the 13-second game. I know a lot of people are talking about, you know, the OT rule game, the game that maybe changes the OT rule, or the coin flip game. Nah, that last 13-second drive, unbelievable. I thought it was over once the Bills scored there, but for Mahomes to march down and tie it up on two plays was unbelievable. So best game I've ever seen. Number seven, Mike, your thoughts on the Colorado Avalanche going 15-0-1 since January 1st.
I think after Sunday night, they're won their 18th in a row at home. Just a hell of a run. And Nathan MacKinnon is out currently for them. He's missed a handful of games with concussion and facial lacerations, I believe it was. So
broke his nose.
Yeah, that's right. You know, going into this week, 67 points, tied with the Panthers for first place in the NHL. Nazem Kadri, 59 points. Remember him? They got a great team. And, you know, I think we talked about this last year in the playoffs. You know, they went out probably earlier than they expected. And they're rolling since January 1st and putting themselves in a good position here in the second half of the season and position themselves for a good playoff spot and make a real run come the spring.
Yeah, clearly the best team in the NHL right now. That top line, MacKinnon, Rantanen, and Langeskog, they have a combined 60 points over that stretch since January 1st. And that doesn't even factor in, as you mentioned, Kadri, who's got 21 points during that time, and 18 by Cal Makar. And let's not forget about Cal Makar. since we've last chatted, Mike, I think he's got three, maybe four highlight reel goals, including my favorite, not that spinny overtime backhand top cheese goal against Chicago. My favorite was an empty net goal last week where he was standing in front of his own net. He shot it high in the air over every single player, and the puck went right into the net without ever touching the ice. Unbelievable player. Unbelievable defenseman, let's remember, for the Colorado Avalanche. I mean, as long as Darcy Kemper can hold his own, this team should win the Western Conference and represent the West in the Stanley Cup. Number eight, final one. Mike, your thoughts on the NHL players not going to the Olympics?
As a fan, disappointing, but I think it was the right decision, you know, given where we are in the world with COVID still and restrictions. The restrictions are in place for Olympic athletes who unfortunately may test positive while they're in Beijing and what they face, potentially not being home for 5 weeks after that. Too many risks involved right now. Good decision. Too many teams have lost players and games to COVID here, so they're going to have a chance to make games up. And you know what? Let's hope in 4 years when it's in Italy that the NHL guys will be back then. But for this, the right decision.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sad for the players who haven't had a chance to play in the Olympics yet, like McDavid, Matthews. But for me, international hockey, it doesn't boil my blood as much as the NHL and the Maple Leafs might. I mean, I want Canada to win, and it's fun to talk about the lineups and the matchups. But my generation has not had the rivalries like the 70s, Canada versus Russia, or the Canada Cups in the 80s, and even in 96, the World Cup against the USA. I mean, yeah, we had the golden goal for Crosby, and that was amazing in Vancouver, but that's really it. I mean, let's focus on the NHL this season. We've already lost too many games. Let's keep these players healthy. Let's keep them with their families here in North America and focus on the main prize, the Stanley Cup. Now, each week, Mike and I will give you our best bet of the week to help you make some cash. Mike was hot to end the year, and I'm a really, really nice guy, so I will let him go first. Mike, what is your lock of the week?
The collegiate game has always been good to me, so that's where I am going. Saturday, February 5th at 4 p.m., the defending and reigning NCAA college basketball champions, the 8th-ranked Baylor Bears, travel to Kansas to play the 10th-ranked Jayhawks. I'm saying Baylor wins.
Nice. Almost picked that one. That'll be a great afternoon matchup. No football this weekend. Gonna have to dive into some other sports. And yeah, you're right, Mike. We all know that my favorite time of year is March Madness, and we are getting so close to it that it's time that we start focusing on college basketball. And what better way to start than the biggest rivalry in college basketball? Number 9, Duke, going to Chapel Hill on Saturday, February 5th to play the UNC Tar Heels. Duke currently sits 17-3, second in the ACC. Well, University of North Carolina is 15-6 and sits fourth in the ACC, but they're unranked after losing to both Wake Forest and Miami. The spread's not out yet, but I don't care what it is. I know Duke's the favorite, and I'm taking Duke to cover whatever the number is, the Duke Blue Devils. That's my lock of the week. Now, we want to hear from you. So make sure to comment on the pod wherever you download your podcast and let us know your thoughts on Twitter and Instagram. We would love the feedback. Check us out on Instagram and Twitter at JABOPod, thestringer.ca, and find Mike and I on Twitter to see our thoughts on all the sports throughout the week. Please subscribe, like, and rate our show, and do us a favor and tell a friend to listen. And as always, clear eyes,
full hearts.
Can't lose.
Oh, yeah.